The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Welcome to Goodish Girls. My name is Dallas.
My name's Alyssa.
Welcome back.
We're here. We only have a few episodes left.
It's kind of sad.
On the last episode, if I don't tear up, it will be surprising.
What a journey.
I'm not ready for it to be over. We have some super exciting things coming up before it's over, but we're very close. And we only have a couple months until Brimstone, so...
That's, I think, what's like, otherwise I feel like I would be like mourning leaving this world, but yes. I know that we're coming back soon. So
yeah, we're about to jump way back into it. We'll deep dive Brimstone just the same as we did Quicksilver, and it'll be amazing. And we have another book that we are going to cover for like a month or so once Quicksilver is over. We have not announced it yet, but we did post a little sneak peek in our Quicksilver like episode schedule on our social media. So if you follow us on social media, check that out. And if you know the book, then let us know. Put it in the comments and maybe we'll tell you if you're right. And again, we'll be announcing it August 1st. We're going to be announcing that. So once we do announce it, then you guys can go listen to it and read it and follow along for our deep dive.
Yeah.
It's a very exciting one. It's going to be great. We're excited.
I'm excited.
Today, though, we are going to talk chapters 35 through 38. And this last like set of chapters, like the ones we're covering today and the rest of the chapters for the book through chapter 45 there's a lot that happens. There's like a ton of things. I'm not going to go too in depth with every single thing, kind of like we've done in previous episodes, but I am going to cover the big things. And I do have a lot of questions this week. So... Classic. Let's get into it. So we're going to start with chapter 35, Oracle. Okay, which is a very important word because we know some very important oracles within this book. So this takes place where Ceres has previously talked to Taelenna, right? She has learned everything about God-binding tattoos and she's
freaking out.
She's pale. She's freaking out. Yeah, she's panicking. So she finds Fischer right in his room where he was waiting for her, right? And he looks genuinely happy. And he's until he sees Ceres's face, right? And he's like, then worried. He's like, oh my God, are you okay, babe? Like, what's wrong? Right. And she asks him, why have you never said my name before? Right. He's like, you called me all these nicknames. She's like, you've said all these things, Osha, human, but you've never actually said my name. The first time he ever said her name was when he kneeled before her and gave his blood in thanks. Right. He explains that at first he hated her because of everything that she represented, which like, ow, it kind of hurt my heart. Right.
But I hate you. I don't even just hate you, but I hate every single thing you represent.
Yeah. Literally everything about you. Ooh, ouch. That one hit me hard in the chest.
I'd be like, okay, I have to leave now.
Yeah, actually, I'm going to take a pause. I'll be back. I'm going to take a walk. Right? I'm now literally mated to you for life, and you hate everything about me.
And you hate everything about me and everything I represent.
Yeah, going to stop you right there, sir. Ceres is stronger than we are. He says that she represented weakness and vulnerability, but not in Ceres, in himself. Ceres claims that she's not weak like the butterflies that he talks about. She's like, I am not this like tiny, fragile thing.
This is why people need to listen to the bonus chapters when he first sees her.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, pathetic.
Pathetic. But he was talking about himself. Ooh, yep. Of course he was.
Yep.
So he says, and I have some big quotes coming up in here just because I think they're really important. I know obviously everyone has read this book, but these really break down kind of what we're talking about. So he says, "My weakness, my vulnerability, I've known for centuries that you were coming, that you were just going to show up one day and change everything. You're the chink in my armor, Saris, the soft spot where the knife slides in. You are the thing that Malcolm will hurt in order to hurt me. And I couldn't fucking bear it." And then he finally goes in to explaining the full meaning of O'Shaleth. And I want to tell you guys right now, when I first read and listened to this book, I did not see this coming at all. And I would like to know where Callie got this meaning from, right? Like, where did she get the idea from about this, like, small, fragile butterfly being protected and being so important and so special and people sacrifice themselves to protect it?
That's a great question. You didn't see what coming? The meaning of
the whole backstory of O'Shaleth.
Yeah. It is like super beautiful. And I love the original cover. Where's my book? I just dropped a bunch of things on the ground.
Look at it. Okay, do you remember when we were talking the covers back in the day, and I was like, I love the cover and it will make sense when you finish the book. Now I'm going to ask you that question once again. You're obviously done with the book. Okay. Does the cover make more sense to you? Does it sit with you?
It does. I love the cover.
Same.
And I love, we talked before, you said didn't she have this commissioned or something?
All I know is that she designed it herself. So I would love to ask her, like, how she came about designing this and how this vision in her mind came to the paper. I don't know, but I'd like to know one day.
I love it. And I know it gets so much hate, and I will stick to my thing of down. Like, it's not traditional, right? Like, if you walk down a romanticy book aisle, it's not super in line with everything else.
Right.
It is different, but I like it. And
I think it's great.
I'm excited for the new ones. I'm excited for what's the word I'm looking for?
Like that they match?
All be alike. Yeah.
Yeah.
Not like in not a series. Conformity. I can't think of the word I want to say, but I'm excited for that. But I like the first cover.
I do too. Like the first cover. And I wonder if one day, for those who do like the original cover, if there is a picture or a scene in mind that Callie has that one day she will put on paper like the first edition, right? Maybe it's like Saris, like the OG cover of Saris that she would have wanted for the second book.
Yeah, that would be interesting. Mm-hmm. I guess understand why people look at Kingfisher's face on this first cover and they're like, that's not my Kingfisher, because it's just not how they maybe imagined him. But that's not enough reason to hate the whole thing.
But I mean, I kind of imagined him like that going into the book, because I looked at the cover before I opened the book, right? So it gave me kind of like a preference, right? And he is
now,
look, he does look young.
Did you read it first or you listened first?
I have to remember. I've done both many times. Now I have to think about it.
I wonder if you read it first.
I read it
if
first.
It's different. Right. Because
I think about
you were looking at that book every time you opened it. Whereas I listened to it first and the cover's like itty bitty on my phone screen when I click on it.
That's fair.
But
I'm
not having to physically crack open that book every time. I wonder.
That's true.
That's like a psych question.
Yeah, right.
That's too. We're diving too deep now. But
if we have any psychiatrist listeners, let us know what's happening.
I would assume that would play a part into it.
Yeah, you're probably not wrong. And I think I have different versions of Kingfisher in my mind, like whether or not I read it or listen to it, or like where we're at in the book. And I am worried about. Not that I'm worried. I am interested to see what the movie brings. Right, because there's a lot of pressure on who they're going to cast. I still
will
stick
be the toughest critic.
No, I probably won't. It'll be fine. I do stand by my request with Anthony, though, that they hire an actor and then they dub his voice over. I'm 100% here for that. Same for Sarah. They can just bring Stella in, bring Anthony in. I'm going to submit to be the Quicksilver.
Oh, yes.
I can do the voice. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, we know we got way off topic. But either way.
That's okay.
One day, I would like more no hate information on that cover, right? If I ever get the chance to ask her, I'm going to preface it. No hate on this. Like, I love the cover.
Yeah.
People who listen to this probably also love the cover. But I don't know. So, the meaning of Oshalith. Something, again, I never could have guessed. And I usually can try and figure out what happens in these fantasy books, in these romantasy books. Yeah. This was not something I saw coming. What he says was, the Oshalith hatch once in most fey lifetimes, up north in the wastelands far beyond Azhen Sky, where the dragons used to live. The air's so cold there that it'll freeze your lungs if you breathe it in without a mask. No life exists there for long. But once in 1,000 years, the howling winds drop, signaling the coming of the Oshalith. News of that event travels quickly. That's when the bravest of our kind set out. They go on foot where no horse can go. When they reach the valley where the Oshalith hatch, they find the butterflies' cocoons and they shield them with their bodies. They give them whatever heat they can for as long as they can. It can take up to 12 hours for them to break out of those cocoons. But when they do, it's the most beautiful thing a person can experience in this lifetime. They glow blue and pink and silver with an ethereal light. They have music, though no one knows how, a sweet, soft song that's capable of healing. The Oshalith mate and lay their eggs, but once it's done, they fill the air and they dance. Protecting them while they live is considered a sacred rite that many die in order to perform. That's what Oshalith means in old Fae Saris, most sacred. Oh, I have goosebumps.
Okay, so I imagine somebody's like, I hated everything about you and everything you represented. Yeah. And then one breath later, they're like, by the way, the nickname I've used for you this entire time is the most sacred and meaningful thing you've ever heard in your whole short little 24 years on Earth. Not on Earth, but you know. Mm-hmm. Like,
that's some whiplash. Emotional, like, whiplash. Yeah. And me all, you were like, we get babe. Yeah. Or honey, right? Oh my gosh. The bar, it's being raised. Thank you, Kingfisher. So yeah, poor Saris is like trying to take all this in, right? And Fisher also explains that every name means something, and they all have fake names, essentially for protection, right? He says, all names hold power in this place. Every name means something. We have true names that we don't share with anyone, not our friends, not our families. Our mothers are often the only people who actually know it, and even a mother might use her child's name to her own advantage in pursuit of power. This paragraph right here, I think, is probably one of the most important paragraphs in the book, right? Because it tells us that Renfis is not Renfis, Loreth is not Loreth. Mm-hmm. Kingfisher, we know that's not his real name, right? But like Danya, Everlane, all of them, none of their names are really what they were given when they were born.
Interesting.
I have a hard time wrapping my mind around that concept and like the point of it. I know there is a point. I have a hard time with it. Do you know what I mean?
I do.
It's crazy. It's crazy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, what power are they? How can Renvis's mom use his original name against him? Like, they know that they know his mom. They know Renfis. They know when he was born. Like, the people around him, right? Mm-hmm. I hope. And I think that it will happen. I think in book two in Brimstone, I think we will dive further into that and the reasoning. I mean, we know the reason behind it, but, like, how that works, right?
So, does this bother you so much because you don't know everyone's real name?
Maybe. Yeah, probably. You know, because when you're reading it, you're like, okay, I don't know Kingfisher's real name. Like, I don't know right. one person's real name. But then you learn you don't know anybody's name at all. In any way, like, everybody's name is fake. Everybody has, mm-hmm. pseudonym. Except for Ceres, yeah. I get, right? Except for Ceres, because she's technically from Zelvarn, so I don't think they do that over there. I think her name is her name, right?
Yeah. Which is so funny, because remember in, like, chapter one, when she's like, I won't give you my name.
Like, yeah.
You'll have to do more than that to get my name.
Yep.
It's interesting.
A name is very important in this book, in this series.
Yeah, even going back to, again, Kingfisher not calling her Ceres, even though mm-hmm. he knows her name.
Right.
He refuses to call her that for so long.
Yeah. It's very wild. Interesting. I wonder if we'll learn anybody's real name in the next book.
I don't know. Makes me think of Tangled, Flynn Rider. And his real name is Eugene.
Yeah. Eugene.
What if Kingfisher's real name is like George?
So there, I saw online the other day. So when he, I'm going in full circle. So when he writes the letter to Ceres that we will go over in just a little bit, he mm-hmm. signs the end of that letter just with the letter F.
Mm-hmm.
It could be for Fisher. Franklin. Fitzgerald.
Frederick.
Fred.
Fred. Freddy.
Fred and Bill.
Oh no.
Yeah, that's not as intimidating as Kingfisher.
I'm just
I don't know.
F names now.
It's gonna be something crazy we could never even think of. But also, it also could just be Fisher, like
Now that Ceres is in this world, everybody knows her name is Ceres.
Mm-hmm.
So what is that?
Yeah, so she
mean?
Can't, I don't know, she can't, there's she no protecting her from that.
She never had a, yeah, like, she had no family to protect her name and call her something else
mm-hmm.
when right. she was growing up. She was just thrown into this world as an adult, and everybody knows her name now.
Mm-hmm. Maybe they'll just call her Queen from now on. Because technically she is.
Queen Fisher. QF.
Queen Fisher. Kingfisher, Queen Fisher.
Yep.
I don't know. Yeah, the name thing, it is such a cool concept.
It is interesting.
I still have a hard time processing it. But I think that's okay. I think that tells you that it's...
That's part of it, right? Yeah.
Right, you're supposed to.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a bad feeling.
No.
I hope we get more details on that in the next book. I need it.
We'll see.
Ceres is sobbing at this point, understandably so, right? And she questions how he knew. She's like, how did he know this whole time? We then learn that his mother was an oracle or a seer. And he explains that she knew Ceres would come one day and be with him. He wasn't allowed to say all of the things, but his mother knew that she would die soon. And she wrote everything about Ceres, that Ceres would one day come in and guide him. She didn't know what her name would be, but that she would have dark hair. And his mom drew pictures of her and captured her almost perfectly. The only thing that was missing was that her ears were pointed, and sometimes his mother was wrong with the little details that had big consequences. This makes me so mad sometimes, because we know toward like more of the end of the book that the fates were, he changed it. Zorth changed it. Right? So Zorth,
yeah,
God of Chaos, decided that he didn't want them together. And we're going to go into this like later on in these chapters, like further episodes down. But she was supposed to be Fae. She was. And he like picked her up and dropped her in somewhere else, right?
Not just somewhere else either.
In the worst place. He was literally, like, 6 ounces of water a day for you, babe.
Yeah, literally the worst place. Also, not to go on another tangent, I was on a run this morning and I brought a baby water bottle with me.
Oh no.
And while I was running, I was like, I wonder how many ounces this is. And I looked at it, it was 10 ounces. And I was like, it's baby water bottle.
Yeah, a little. Oh, you mean like the mini ones?
The mini ones. And I was like, because I had leftovers from my daughter's birthday party. And yeah. I was like running and I like looked at it and I was like, this must be like 6 ounces. And I was like, mm-hmm. this is 10 ounces.
It puts it into perspective.
Yeah. That's almost two times the mm-hmm. daily limit or daily that's allowance.
Insane. That's insane.
Yep.
I wonder if Callie measured it out. Like, I'm sure she did. She was like, what's an extremely low amount of water? Insane. I can't.
Yeah.
Thankfully, she's very high. Saris is very hydrated now.
Oh, yeah.
And we know that Hayden is also... I'm not going to say very hydrated. I'm going to say more hydrated than more he hydrated. Was. Yeah, because I think he has 3 times the water ration now, but it's still not a good amount.
Saris's skin probably looks great.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely. Until she goes in the forge.
Glowing.
Yeah.
Well.
gets all messy. But yes, no, you're probably not wrong. Drinking water is very important for your skin. Yeah. So Kingfisher's mother told him about the mating bond, but when he met her, like when he met Saris, he could smell the mating bond on her. And I think that answers a couple different questions for us that we have asked in previous episodes as well. Like, can you smell the mating bond? Does it have its own kind of scent? Mm-hmm. So he could smell the physical mating bond on her. And I think, I still go back to my theory that Wendy, a couple episodes back, I think Wendy could smell the mating bond on her.
When we were interviewing Stella and we talked about her favorite, like, other characters other than Saris,
mm-hmm.
all I could think about was Wendy, but I chose not to bring it up. But
oh, you should have brought her up.
I know. I thought about it and then I was like, nah, like, we're going somewhere else. But I love Wendy.
Wendy is a great character. I hope Wendy comes back in book two.
Yeah.
I think Wendy was a little Easter egg. And I think she's an important character.
I could see her coming back.
She seemed to know a lot of things. I think she's also an oracle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because she's like, oh, the Zelvarin girl. And then she's like, you seem special. Like, I was like, lady, yeah. You know a lot. You know a lot of things.
Yeah.
Who knows, though? I could be wrong. So he speaks more about the markings and how frustrating it is to have a fate decide for you what happens instead of deciding for yourself. He says, historically, marks like that come at a cost. They're kind of marks that people will want to write stories about and not happy ones. And then Fisher finally opens up about how he's feeling and he's legit unwell. He sees things and hears things and he says it's getting worse. It gets worse all the time, right? And when Saris offers to make him another relic, he replies with, this is not just a relic. It's warded with spell work, too. My mother went to the witches and had it, along with a number of other items made for me before she died. Things she knew I'd need.
The witches?
Other items? Can I have a list? It doesn't give us a list.
Do we think in the next book, in Brimstone, is Fisher going to get, like, way worse? And Saris is going to have to go to the witches?
Maybe. Oh, that. Wow. I didn't think of that. Maybe.
I didn't until just now, but now
I love it. Yes.
Now my brain is going, you know, like that.
She has to find the witches.
Right. Because
right?
they're.
They're missing.
Right. We're losing him.
Mm-hmm.
The only way we could contain this before and keep him like somewhat stable was this relic that was warded by mm-hmm. the witches.
Right.
Do we need to go find the witches for some like something else?
Yeah. Where are the items? Items plural. What the are items, they?
The pirate where are they? The items.
Yeah. Where are they hiding?
That's where the pirates come in.
That's where they're in the dragon's lair. Maybe.
Bring it all together.
We're cracking this case wide open.
I'm cracking the code.
Putting the puzzle pieces together. It reminds me of that TikTok of that lady who has all the math symbols like floating around her.
Yes. That's me right
if
now.
If you know, you know.
It's going to be a short on TikTok. Me. Yeah. I'm cracking the code.
I've got it. The pirates.
Pirates. The witches. The dragon.
They're all coming back to us now. Look at us. I'm 100% here for it. It's going to happen. Yeah. Items. Plural. And I wonder how many people read over this. Because I also, in the beginning, read right over this. And I was like, oh, that's fun. So if you're listening to this, did you read over it? Did you catch it the first time?
I mean, I for sure did, right? Like, I think there's a lot of details in these books that are so easy to read over the first time. Mm-hmm. And you won't notice until you go and do a reread because a lot of times these details don't become important until later.
Yes.
And, you know, why would I file all these tiny details away not knowing if I needed it later?
Mm-hmm. Agree. Yeah. I wonder if you were supposed to miss it the first time.
Right.
So interesting. Yeah, no, I definitely missed it the first time. And then I went back and I was like, oh, okay. All right. All right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah. A number of items that Mama Fisher knew we would need. So Fisher also states that eventually he will be too far gone, but Saris doesn't need to worry about it because he will reject their mating bond and she won't have to deal with him. So he knows that he's like getting worse and it might be too bad. So I think that does go along with your theory of book two of like he's gonna go too far, right? And she's gonna have to save him because Mama Fisher says like she will save you, like she's gonna help you, right? The Quicksilver's like you need to save him, and I know that she does save him in this book technically.
Yeah,
but who knows if that's actually what the Quicksilver was talking about, because it knows all the things, right?
Right.
So they say, I'm not sure how it works exactly. I scoured the library at Kalish. For 2 weeks, I read everything that I could lay my hands on that referred to the mating bond. I wanted to find a way to prevent it from forming in the first place, even though I knew it was already too late for that. And y'all, I finally found what he was researching in the tent. I don't know if you remember a couple episodes back.
Yeah.
There's books all over this tent. There's a rug. There's all these things. Mm-hmm. And there's books everywhere. And I was like, what was he looking up? And it was indeed said mating bond and how to prevent it. He was unsuccessful. Yes, finally. An answer to it. I was like, oh my gosh, finally. I looked for that forever. Could not figure it out.
What a sad concept to reject a mating bond. Something that's so rare.
Yep.
Obviously, we know what happens here, but like just the idea.
Yeah, the thought of it.
So sad.
He doesn't say whether or not it's painful. So I wondered.
Like, I mean, he's always in pain, right? Like
that's true.
In some way or another.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. So Fisher wanted to find a way to prevent the bond altogether, but all he found was how to initiate the waiting period for acceptance, which we know that he did, right? Because he can like glamour them and initiate that. So he decided that he was going to reject it all. And Saris is pissed. She's like really upset. And Fisher notes that the priority is getting Everlane and getting Saris home to her family in Zilvaren. And this is where I was so proud of Saris, because she says, no, really, I'm thrilled that you've had so long to think about all of this, that you've known for hundreds of years that I was going to show up in your life, that you knew that what those tattoos meant, and you got to decide that you were going to reject me for my own good and send me packing back to Zilvaren. I'm ecstatic that you made all of these awful, difficult decisions on my behalf, King Fisher. Yes, girl.
Yeah.
You should have been told. Miscommunication now, trope.
Now. Do I think he should have said it immediately? No.
Fair.
Again, that my continued argument, episode to episode. Do I think he should have said something before just like shipping her home? Yeah. Yes. Like, let her have her decision, right? Don't keep her completely in the dark forever. Mm-hmm. But also, maybe not say it immediately, because I don't know what would have happened there.
She's so angry with him right now. Rightfully so. I wish he would have given her a little breadcrumb besides they'll fade, probably. There's other things you could like it means that like we are in this, I don't know, the fates are deciding something. Say it gently, right? Like sugarcoat it. Mm-hmm. Give her a little something. Nothing. He was like, meh, probably fine. Yeah. Working his gentle communication skills. So, but either way, he didn't and she's mad. So continuing on to this, before you guys continue on, we are going into some sensitive content, some trigger warnings from this book that include thoughts about self-harm. So if this is something that you skipped over within the book, just skip down maybe like a minute or two and we'll be past this portion. So I just want to put that out there before we continue on. That way everyone has a moment to either choose to listen or choose to move forward from this point to another, to like, again, maybe a minute or two, and then we'll be over that part. So Fisher is not dying via the Quicksilver. However, he says that what he deals with is not a life to live and he won't do it forever. Saris clarifies that Fisher is planning to unalive himself and he tells her Renfis is going to help him. Saris stops him mid-sentence and calls him selfish and the silver responds. The silver swallowed the green in his eye entirely. Like, boof. Gone.
So interesting.
And I am begging for a Quicksilver point of view. Literally begging for one. I don't know why I need to know what the Quicksilver is saying, but like, is it upset? It's probably pissed, right? Because it is him. It wants to live. It chooses to keep him around, right? So
that's
did
his host,
it know?
Right? Like, that's its host. That's its
right
as a like parasite. Mm-hmm. That's where it is.
Is this the moment that the Quicksilver found out that this was his plan? Has he never said it out loud before? I don't think he went around telling everybody, right? What
but
did
if Renfis
he
is said, going to help him?
Does
they,
Renfis
like, speak in
know?
Code?
Does Renfis know that he's going to help?
Interesting.
So here's, and then Saris responds with some legit questions, right? She's like, okay, are you okay with like chilling around when you die? Because Lorth is still here. Right. And are you okay with Lorth cutting his life short as well? Because he has no plans on letting your soul be trapped. Right. Which I guess that was also supposed to be a secret. Fisher's like, oh, you weren't supposed to know that, but okay. And she's like, are you comfortable with asking Renfis to do this for you and not tell anyone? So I truly think that this is the moment that the Quicksilver found out this was his plan. And I think it was pissed. I think it was really upset.
That's
and I
very
think
interesting.
That's why it went like immediately, like zero to like poof.
Yeah.
Big. That's just my guess.
How loudly it would be talking at that moment.
Oh, I'm sure it's screaming at him. Absolutely not. You will not do that. Isn't that wild?
Interesting.
That's my thought. So she decides this is ridiculous and she's getting herself to the library and college to research how to save Everlane and Fisher. She's like, I'm going to go figure this out because your solution is not the solution that we're doing. Thank you.
I don't think we've ever discussed this. Have you ever thought about why Saris can't hear what the Quicksilver is always saying to Fisher?
I think it decides. I think the Quicksilver decides when it's going to be speaking to her or not. And this is why I say this, because when it was like when she was forging, if I remember correctly, it was like Lorth's sword, right? There was a long moment of silence and then it decided. I think it was talking to itself, right? Like thinking to itself or speaking to itself. So I think it picks and chooses when she is able to hear. I don't think it's just able to hear her or like I don't think she's just able to hear it when she wants to. If it chooses not to.
And it, yeah. Yeah, I guess everywhere else the Quicksilver has been, it hasn't had anyone else to talk to.
Yeah, so it's like, hello, hi, I'm here. I'm right here. Talk to me.
Right. Whereas this Quicksilver has had Fisher to talk to, torment, everything
for
how
long?
For a long
time. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Interesting.
And not that it has internal thoughts, right? Like it is a sentient being. Maybe it kind of has, I guess, internal thoughts, right? But and then it can choose for it to be external, like to Saris. Just like it can choose when it talks to like Carrion, right? When Carrion gets his sword, when Lorth got his sword, they were like, oh, I can hear it, right? And it's like, I'm choosing now to share my words with you.
I see. Yeah. Just
that would
thought.
Be my guess.
No, it makes sense.
It's a good thought.
As we were discussing this, I was like, and saying like, oh, the silver like overtook his entire eye and thinking like it's probably screaming. Like just thinking about it, speaking to Saris, but that does make sense to me.
Yeah, and I think it would be a very different story if she could hear all of the things that it says to Kingfisher all the time.
She'd be insane.
Oh, for sure.
Just like he, you know, half mm-hmm. is, where he yeah. has those moments where he's like, shut up, like, stop. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, I think it would be a totally different story. I think it does pick and choose. Okay. But that wraps up that chapter.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, I'm going to go find things and fix it. Here we go. And then we jump right into 36, Isabel. It does look like Isabel. It's not. It's Isabel. Just for clarification of pronunciation, if you did not use the audiobooks. So after Sarah finally goes and gets some sleep, she makes her way to the library, as she said she was going to do. And this is where we learn that the last of the witches abandoned Yvelia 100 years ago, and no one has seen the Balquitter clan in twice as long. So we know that there were witches, right? And then in the previous chapter, even Kingfisher mentions, like, my mom went to the witches. So we know that witches exist in this realm. Or yeah, they used to, at least, right? So they have to go find one in order to save Everlane. Taylena says that they need one to put Everlane in a hold. So essentially she can get the venom out, and it can take weeks. So we need someone to put her in like a trance, essentially, like put her comatose. It is noted that there are some half-witchens in Fulton's Gap, and they can shadowgate that far without Bellicon sensing the magic and showing up there, because they're obviously still hiding from him. Carrion asks to tag along, but is denied because seducing the half-witch will not help them. He agrees, and he wants to do it just to say that he did it. So good on you, Carrion. He wants to add that to his checklist. I think he has a little book that he writes in, like a little tiny book.
Carrion's accomplishments.
Yes, that's what he would name it too, 100%. So Daniel offers to go with two hands, because Taylena healed them. Hands are there.
That's right.
I was like pretty sure she was not going to get a hand back, but she got it. So Fisher, Renfus, and Dania go. She's ready. She's like, I'm going to go with you guys.
I'm ready. Send me out.
Put me in, coach.
I have two hands. Send me out, coach.
Here we
I'm
go.
Ready.
I can't. Well, they're both full grown too. They're not a baby hand.
No
anymore.
Baby hands. No Deadpool hands.
No baby Deadpool yet. So they're all going, and they're gonna go find the half witch. And when they return, Renfus is really upset. They are about to make a deal with them, and Dania tells them it's the least that they can do since they left the Fae to clean up their messes and basically betrayed Yvelia. Everything went south after that, right? And then Lorth chimes in and he says, next time she tries to hit me, I'm going to put her over my knee and spank her, and not in the fun way. Lorth, are you taking requests for like, can we get in line? Is that like a thing? And this is where I like went like just a little feral. I'm trying to be professional on my podcast, but there's got to be a waiting list, right? Like Dania can go first and then we can go.
Oh my God. I can't.
That's immediately what I thought of. Dania should be so grateful. So look, yeah, she ruined
she
everything.
She has two hands.
And she's going to get spanked by Lorth. Yes,
she
girl.
Nice looking men around her.
Yep. We're going to talk about it at our girls' brunch.
Oh my God.
I can't. So Dania ruins everything, right? So Dania is being returned to Erin, and Fisher is going back to them on his own to smooth things over with them. So Fisher's like, you're done, babe. You're going home. I'm going to take you back. You don't have an option, and I'm going to go fix things. Which, again, I think it... I still stand on my Dania train. Very bad decision. Girl needs to learn how to hold the tongue just a little. But I think it does, again, speak to where she lands in the pack, because they're like, God damn it, Dania. But they don't like kick her. You know what I mean? They don't like kick her out of the family. Like, this is just who she is. She's one of the boys. She's got a big mouth, and they love her anyways, which is why I, again, think that Morel was a huge part of the pack, and I think she was like the mediator of them, if I had to guess. And I think without her, it's hard for Dania.
It does, after reading the bonus chapters and then like looking at the pack as a whole, it seems like the weight is poorly distributed in mm-hmm. some way. Like there's something about it that just doesn't quite all fit together. And yes. I think it's supposed to feel that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is interesting.
I would agree. So without Morel, I think something is missing within Danya. And I would like in the second book to dive a little bit deeper into her thoughts and her grief when that happened, like when Morel dies. And again, I hope you've all read the bonus chapters by now, because I think I've said it on every single episode and we did an episode just on them alone. So if you didn't, now you know Morel dies. R.I.P. So either way, Danya went home. She's doing her thing now. She's probably really upset somewhere. They did find one half-witch who looked pretty young, but was a real spitfire. She said a bunch of mean things to Renfis, and then she used magic to throw him in the mud. So now Renfis is altered. Poor Ren. Poor sweet Ren. He probably needs a nap. Like, he's so over the day, right? Yeah. Fisher goes, and he returns with Isabel. She's the granddaughter of the Balquhidder High Witch, Melina. Fisher claims that the humans are not going with, but obviously Ceres argues and that Everlane is their friend. Carrion reminds him that he's never met Everlane. He's like, I never met this gal, but I'm going to go for you in solidarity. LOL. Thank you, Carrion. He's like, I've never met her.
Carrion gets FOMO, okay?
Oh, 100%. Yes.
Carrion's like, I have two boots. I'm going.
Yeah. Two boots. A potted plant?
Two boots and a plant.
There should be
a sticker that's like two boots and a little plant sticking out.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so now we have a list of stickers that we need to make.
I know.
Somehow, some way. I can't draw anything. I'm not creative in that manner, but if anyone wants to make these stickers, please do.
Cute.
We have I need a Kingfisher candle. I need all these. I need a girl's brunch sticker. I need a boot plant sticker. We got a list of goals here.
Yep.
One day we'll open a merch store and we'll put them in there.
Yep.
So he claims he is too pretty to die old and that he should definitely go with. And so they all agree. The Fae, the warriors, the half-witch, and the humans are all going to Gilthrei. Bam. We close out chapter 36.
Let's go.
What a fun little pack that they have now.
I know.
The wolves, the witches.
You've never played Dungeons & Dragons, have you?
No, but Cass has tried to convince me to play it.
I think you would be so in it. We wouldn't be able to get
you. Your husband runs one, right?
Out. Oh, yeah.
Austin, can I be a very uneducated newbie in your D&D group?
I swear to God, the door is going to swing open. He's going to telepathically know you just said that, and the door is going to swing open. He's going to be like, yeah.
He's like, sit on the couch. He's like, they're talking about Dungeons & Dragons. Yeah. I can feel it. I would. I would try it. This
group of, you know, Mod Podge humanoids is the makings of a D&D campaign. Like, that's what every campaign is. So,
and I get to pick what I am, right? I get to like,
yeah, you get to pick. It.
I can do what I want,
mm-hmm. essentially.
And then he rolls the dice, right? Because he decides.
And
what
so do
is
you.
My fate.
So do you.
Okay. I'm going to need
like, I want to do this. Yeah. You say like, I want to do this. And he'll be like, okay, roll this dice. And depending on how high you roll, kind of, tells how well you execute whatever you're doing, but you can really do whatever you want.
Wild. I think I would have fun.
I think you would have so much fun.
I would have so many swords because I can have as many swords as I want, right?
You start, you get to pick like a certain weapon or weapons to start, but you can collect along the way.
Oh, all right.
And
all
buy
right.
More. And win things and find treasure.
Bet. I'm in. Sold. I need written instructions.
That's fair.
And I need the other people on the D&D crew team, squad, group that you have, whatever. I don't know what we call ourselves now. I'm going to put myself in there. The group, I need them to preference that I've never done this before, so that way they don't sigh in exasperation every 2 minutes when I ask questions.
No, that makes it more fun.
Okay. They're like, this girl's wild. So we are jumping into chapter 37, Much Sharper. So Everlane is still with Malcolm, and they are attempting to put a plan in place to save her. Fisher asks for just the night for him and Saris to get all the problems out, like get all the problems outside, like leave them outside and focus on just them. He opens up a shadow gate, and instead of going to Kalish, they go back to the apartment above the bakery. There are candles everywhere, and Fisher cascades the room in shadows. Things are getting very romantic, and Saris starts to feel the god-bound runes across her body. She feels them everywhere. Her wrists, her spine, her stomach. This was them being unglamored? Question mark. This was them setting more into place? Like, what was like this?
Asking the question again, since they, like, he initiated, like, this waiting period.
Oh, like her body, like, asking, like, are you ready?
Yeah.
Oh.
No.
Okay, interesting. That's a good thought. I really didn't know. I was like, because she said that she could feel them in all these places, right? And then one of my legit favorite quotes of this whole book happens. I quote this line to people all the time. And even when I was re-listening this in the car the other day to get ready for this episode, I had like my steering wheel and I was like, no one will ever fuck you the way that I fuck you, Saris Fane. I'm about to introduce you to all seven gods. And when you meet them, don't forget to tell them I'm the one you worship on your knees. Ah, it's the best line.
Yep.
I want to know when Callie Hart wrote this line, did she also scream out loud afterwards?
I think
she knew it was going to be the best line.
This is the line that the chapter was written around. I think she had this line. She came up with this, and then she wrote the chapter around this line.
Ooh.
It's like when you're...
Yes.
Like, as someone who used to write music, it's like you get the hook, and you're like, okay, that... I know that sells. Like, I know that's the hook of the song or of the chorus or whatever. I'm writing the whole thing around it.
Okay. All right. Yes. That's the best line. I'm obsessed with it. Yeah. I want that. Can I have that on a sticker? Can someone put this whole line on this quote on a sticker for me? I want it on a sweatshirt.
Not work appropriate, though.
No, I won't.
It can't go on your work water bottle.
It will not go on my work water bottle, but on a different water bottle.
It'll
my
go
work
on
water
bottle
is pretty full, honestly. Like, it has all my bookish stickers. It has our podcast sticker on it now. But there's no room for that line.
We'll get you a podcast water bottle. It can go on that one.
Yes. And I'll just use it during podcast stuff. Mm-hmm. And we'll have all the fun stickers on it. Yes, 100%. So best line finally happens. And now they are official. The tattoos are officially unglamored at this point, which goes back to like when she was feeling something. Were they being unglamored in that moment? Was her body asking the question one more time? Maybe both, right? So she sees the tattoos on her skin once again when Fisher removes the shadows just enough. He asks if she is afraid to see them, but she said that she is not, at least for tonight. As everyone is being introduced to all seven gods, Fisher starts to get new tattoos on his skin, right? It says, fresh runes chained his collarbone, interlocking, and they're bold. The design on his neck looked like feathers at first, and yes, they were feathers, the outstretched wings of a majestic bird flashing metallic blue and green fanned around either side of his neck. So it's interesting because the wings coloring is metallic and actually matches the one on Saris, because she also has metallic tattoos. So there is some resemblance there as well. So we finally find out why he never got any tattoos before, right? Why was she the only one getting them? And Fisher, it's because Fisher has accepted the bond officially, right? Saris brings up the issue that she is literally just a human, and he agrees that her lifespan is inconvenient, but he doesn't care, and he would spend minutes with her if that's all he had. Saris panics, and he's like, girl, are you okay? With how she reacted, Fisher covers that tattoos once again, and he tells her that she has a few weeks to make a decision. No rush. If it's not accepted, the tattoos will just disappear. And then he says, I'm in love with you, Saris Fane. he whispered quietly into her hair. And I'm already half mad anyway. What's a little complicated thrown into the mix? And just about she's about to interrupt, he says, please, for the love of gods, don't say anything. Just let me have my fantasy just for tonight. And it's rare for him to like kindly ask for something for himself,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
This was a rare moment. And it was a special moment. And she agrees, right? They calm down. And Saris reminds him that he came to Ballard to get something. She's like, hey, we came here before. Like, you needed something from the people. What was that? And he says that he came here for a little hope. Oh, that wraps up that chapter.
Yeah.
What a good one.
Yeah.
So good. Then we go into chapter 38, Martyrs for Friends. So Saris wakes up in the apartment the next morning, but this time she's alone, and there is a shadow gate waiting for her. She immediately realizes Fisher is gone, and she knows that he went to do something stupid and reckless. I don't know how she knew immediately. She just it was just in there. She just knew, right? She's like, oh, no. So she finds a note underneath the clothes that he had left for her. And I know that we've read the note, but it is a little bit long, but I am going to read it because I think it has some stuff in it that's important. So he says, this may seem dramatic now, but it'll make sense in time, Saris. Go through the gate. It'll take you back to Kalish. Wait there with the others. I'll send Lane back as soon as I can. Tell Isabel to sedate her the second she comes through the gate. She'll be close to transitioning. There won't be much time. She'll want to go back through the gate before I close it, so you'll have to be ready for that. You'll have to stop her. This will be all for nothing if she jumps back through. Tell Lorth to live his life. Tell him not to worry about me. I have endless patience and no interest in having martyrs for friends. Tell Renfris that I'm sorry, that he was the standard that I always held myself to, and Yvelia would have been a better place if I was as half as good as him. And you, Osha, I release you from your oath. You know how to make the relics now. A selfish part of me wants to beg you to make as many as you can so that my friends and their families can escape Yvelia before this realm falls. But I understand if you need to go. Find Hayden and Elroy. Help your friends. Then go exploring. There are countless realms out there waiting to be found. Make one of them yours. I've never been one to trust in the gods, but I choose to believe that all things come from the same place when life begins. I have hope that they return to the same place when it ends. I'll be waiting for you there, Saris Fane. Signed, the letter F. Ouch.
Yep. I hate when they wake up to a note.
Mm-hmm. It's hard. But she would have stopped him. She would have tried.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think that's almost always it, right?
Yeah. So here's my question. Do you want to go first?
No, I was just going to say I love that he signed it F, but
yes, is that an Easter egg? I don't know. Is he signing it for, because he's like, just call me Fisher, right? Did he sign it for Fisher because that's what he's gone by? Is it an Easter egg for his real name? I don't know. Unsure. Did he write this note before he brought her to the apartment, or did he write it after she fell asleep?
After she fell asleep.
You think so?
I don't know.
It doesn't tell us. I'm just curious what you think. I think he wrote it before.
I'm like, that was his plan.
Mm-hmm. To have one more night with her and then leave.
Yeah, that tracks. It's really sad, though.
Mm-hmm. It is sad, but it's very Fisher.
Yeah.
It sucks. I hate it.
Yeah.
But either way. So Saris leaves the apartment via Shadowgate. She steps back into Kalish, where she startles Carrion. He's like, oh my gosh, where did you come from, right? He mentions that he was snooping for Fisher's diary, which he doesn't have, but found a book that had drawings of Saris all over it, but with pointed ears. She brushes the conversation aside. She's like, yeah, there's a book. It has my face in it. I get it. Because she's fueled with rage at the moment, right? And she heads to the library. She's going. Once reading the letter from Fisher, Renfis is obviously pissed. He's upset. The question comes up of, is there a pool of quicksilver at Gilthry, which is where Fisher is, where he went, right? Because that's where the maze is. So Ren answers with, no, not that I know of. There was one a long time ago, but Bellicon took it when he came into power. He merged it with the pool at the Winter Palace so it would be large enough to transport an army. We know this is incorrect, right? Because if I'm correct, the maze is located within Gilthry because it's surrounded by the citizens who were trapped and burned there, right? And then the floor breaks open, right? In the bonus chapter is the maze at the end of the Kindle one. The floor breaks open. Kingfisher jumps in. That is the pool. How would he have merged it? Did he like have alchemists way back in the day that like scooped it up and took it over to the other pool and poured it in? Right? Maybe. Or is this how Malcolm, like, and Bellicon, is this how Bellicon gets over back to Malcolm? But it was also like covered and now it's not covered.
I don't know. That's a good question.
Do you know what I, like, do you know what I mean? So yeah.
I never really thought about it. I kind of like read it and was like, okay, like took it for what it was and didn't really think about that. But I also read it I think the bonus chapters would kind of affect how you think about this.
Oh, 100%. Well, and then it was there two pools then, right? Was there one pool that Bellicon took and merged with his pool? Because we know that the pool at the palace is massive. And then there's a second one that they didn't know about.
I would assume like alchemists back in the day would have to do with that, because at that time you would want as big of a quicksilver pool as you could get. Mm-hmm. You could transport literal armies.
Right, for sure.
So I would assume that, but
I don't know. I have some questions about it, though. That's for sure.
Yeah.
So, yeah, because the group, they don't know that the ground opened and that a pool was discovered and that Bellicon did not take whatever quicksilver was there, because they, like, Kingfisher can't tell them what happened. Mm-hmm. So they have no idea. So this was disappointing to Ceres, because she knows that somewhere in Kalish there is a pool she does not have access to yet. But if she did, she would make relics to go through it and over there to save Fisher, right? Because Fisher had told her, like, hey, in Kalish, there's a pool. Like, you can have access to it soon and then do whatever you need to do. So we know there is one there somewhere. We just haven't seen it. So there's pools literally everywhere.
Yeah.
Carrion breaks through this, like, grief that's going on right now. And he asked the question, how long is the shadow gate open before Ceres came through it earlier? And she says, like, maybe 10 to 12 seconds. So, like, once the gate opens, you pass through it. 10 to 12 seconds later, it then closes, right? Carrion has the idea that when Fisher opens up a portal to send Everlane through, that they would have 10 to 12 seconds to go back through that portal right to where Fisher is.
This is the most Carrion idea ever. And it's why I love him.
It's the best. I do have some questions again, though. The portal is two ways, right? We know that it works.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that upsets the portal? I know the portal isn't like a sentient being, but do you think that going the opposite way is hard for it?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
I think it's just there. Like, it's like,
it's like opening a door.
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe I'm probably thinking too much into that.
It's like going on an elevator. Like, the elevator doesn't care, you know?
Okay, yeah, the doors are open, then they close when they close.
That's how I think, at least.
That's fair. That's fair. So Carrion has this wonderful idea, and everyone loves it, right? And then he decides that he is going to help save Ceres' quote, asshole boyfriend, but he wants a fancy sword first. Good for you, Carrion. Hey. You deserve a sword. So Ceres gets Carrion a sword, and this time the Quicksilver wants a good joke to bind itself to the previously created metal. So it's like an older sword from the armory, new Quicksilver that was also in the armory that Ceres did not know was there. And it's like, I want a joke. And Ceres tries and fails miserably to make it laugh, right? This bargain, this request was literally made for Carrion Swift.
Yeah.
Because he comes in with an absolute banger of a joke. He says, a husband turns to his wife one day and says, you know, I bet you can't think of something to tell me that will make me both happy and sad at the same time. The wife doesn't even need to think about it. She turns to her husband and says, your cock is way bigger than your brother's.
This Quicksilver was for Carrion. And I 100%. Imagine if you had a Quicksilver POV for this moment, this Quicksilver is probably almost excited to be in Carrion's sword, right?
Yep.
Like, it's just meant to be.
he hears the joke and it's like, oh my gosh. And Polly's like, bro,
I've been waiting for you.
You're here. What's up, my man? Like, yeah. It probably has the funniest voice. Mm-hmm. I cannot. So good. So Carrion gives the new sword a bunch of other jokes and eventually a little touch of blood, not too much because it makes him queasy, to seal it all in, right? The sword needs to be named. And after careful deliberation, he looks at it and decides it looks like a Simon. And the sword likes the name.
Again, furthering my argument, they're meant to be together.
They really are. They really are. So we learn that Lorith is nervous that none of the things that Isabel and Taylena are setting up will actually work for Everlane because, he says, this has never been done before, that we know of anyway. The cure for the blood curse was lost over 1,000 years ago, and that only helped the Fae who had been cursed, not turned. Turned vampires need to die before they transition, and witch magic can't affect the dead. There's a chance Malcolm's venom will kill Lane before she can be healed, even if she is frozen by Isabel's magic. So that's, it's kind of a lot. Yeah. It's like a 50-50 chance, right? But, and I feel like it's fair for Laura to be worried.
Adding more stakes to the problem you already have.
Yeah. It is interesting that he does know so much about the, like, the Curse of Four and their magic and how that works. Yeah. And here's where we get kind of fun. So Lorth goes on to note that he doesn't trust Isabel. He says, dragon lovers, they're the reason we're in this mess in the first place. If it weren't for them, there wouldn't be any vampires. Okay. Book two. We find the witches. They ride on the dragons. Witches riding dragons over Kalish. Whoosh-ah. Big weak spans. 100%. So, we don't know the actual backstory behind this, right? Like, we don't know how the curse, all that stuff. But Isabel says that her kind were tasked by Ruik Dianthus to find a cure for the curse, and they had no part in creating it. Do you think that Carrion flinched in this moment, hearing his dad's name again?
Yeah.
Knowing he couldn't be like, oh, yeah, that was my dad. Like, well, like he can't say anything, right? Do you think he was like,
It's definitely getting too close to home for him.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. Yeah. Agreed. Okay. Here, it on our socials, things like that, and also in some of the fan pages that, like, our Goodish Girls group is a part of, there was a fan theory that was put out, and I kind of like it. So, on our social, someone noted that they think that Lorith and Isabel had a thing in the past because of this encounter, like a romantic thing. Because Isabel tells the warrior, Lorith, because she calls him a warrior, that he should be grateful that she helped his kind and then asks what his name is. She's like, what is your name again? And he says, you damn well know what my name is. We've met before. And then he calls her a witch, right? And she smiles at him and says, I must have forgotten. And Lorith is pissed. And this is very not Lorith behavior.
Yeah.
Right? Very unlike him. And I agree with that fan theory. Like, this is scorned lover kind of behavior.
Yep. I could see it for sure.
So I think that our beautiful redhead Isabel and our wonderful warrior Lorith had a thing. Maybe in book two, they'll, like, come back together.
Maybe.
Lorith deserves happiness.
Or at least we'll get more backstory.
Yes. But I had not thought of that theory before they had posted it too. So thank you for posting that. But yes, 100%. Lorith and Isabel. So Ren actually makes Lorith apologize. He's like, no. Like, apologize, we're moving on. And he sort of does halfway, right? So at that moment, right then, a black and angry hole opens up and things start flying everywhere as Everlane crash through it onto the table, breaking it. The gate was on the ceiling, the shadow gate, right? Up in the air on the ceiling. And they only had seconds to get everyone through it. Ceres is totally unprepared because this was supposed to happen at dusk and it was still light out. So she did not have her sword. Which, girl, you're getting ready to go to war. Keep your sword on. What do you mean? Like, it could happen. And yes, he said that time, but, like, Fisher left early, right? Like, I just thought that was a little silly. She's like, I don't have my sword. I was like, girl, what are you doing? Yeah. Anyways, that's just me. So, again, it's on the ceiling. They're trying to figure it out. Carrion went first, and then Saris right after. As Loreth was throwing Saris up through the gate, Everlyn attempts to warn her of the water, but it's too late, and things are going too fast. Everything was spinning, and gravity was wild as Saris fell into nothingness. End chapter. Wild, right?
Get real. Yeah.
Things are getting very, very real. They're getting very close to everything coming together. So yes, you have Carrion and you have Saris. As of the end of this chapter, that's who we know went through the gate. Mm-hmm. Everlyn is now on the other side. Broken the table. All the things went
broken
everywhere.
The table.
Table broken. Poor girl. It's all right. She has fae healing. She'll be fine. Wild.
Yep.
Those are some good chapters.
They are. A lot, like we've been saying, but like a lot is starting to really pick up and the pace is starting to really pick up.
Yeah. Agree. So. If you loved this episode, please like and subscribe to our channel. Make sure to follow us on social media. We post a lot of things on TikTok and Instagram at Goodish Girls Pod. Make sure to check out our interview with Anthony Palmini that we had. He was very amazing. He's so nice. And I think it was a really good interview. There is a Kingfisher line or two in there for you. And make sure to check out our interview with Stella Bloom, the voice of Saris. She was so kind and incredible. It was such an honor to talk to her. So I think you guys are really going to love these two interviews. If you have any theories on these last chapters, put them in the comments. Let us know. DM us. Share it with your bookish friends. Our Quicksilver deep dive is almost over. Oh my gosh. And we have one more very special thing coming up that I'm not telling you yet. Aha. You'll find out in a couple weeks.
Soon.
Yeah. So again, my name is Dallas.
And I'm Alyssa.
Thanks for listening to the Goodish Girls.
Bye.
Bye. Can't get enough of the Goodish Girls? Follow us on social media for sneak peeks at our upcoming episodes and bonus content.